This is the Ro Khan Show with me, Anna DeBlantis. Ro is going to be here in just a little bit, but we're going to get started with the show right now. We have a lot to get to. If you're just joining us, Bill Cosby found guilty all three counts of sexual assault in that sexual assault trial, I should say, out of Pennsylvania. That was handed down this afternoon, and very emotional displays inside, outside the courtroom. Women were running, weeping as the verdict was announced out of the courtroom after some emotional, after breaking down in tears, some of them, with when they heard that verdict. Bill Cosby himself yelling an expletive out in court as the prosecutors tried to revoke his bail, and he mentioned that they already had his passport, but he has access to a private plane. Then he yelled he didn't have one and used an expletive there. We're going to get to some of the details of what happened there with that breaking news. Gretchen Carlson will be joining us about 3:20. And she, of course, one of the strong voices of the Me Too movement, and have her weigh in and others throughout the show today. But we want to get right over to WGN-TV's Lourdes Duarte, because she has what seems to me, just from reading about it, a very powerful investigative story tonight. And I think one that may surprise a lot of people to hear what about this man that you interviewed. Lourdes, tell us about your story tonight. And I'm sorry, let me put your mic on.
Hey, here I am.
Hey, Lourdes.
Here I am. Hey, good afternoon. Nice to talk to you.
You too. Okay. I saw this come out across social media earlier, and WGN-TV investigates, pushed it out. A man you interviewed was in Cook County lockup for over a decade without a trial.
And he is still there. Yeah, his name is Alex Daniel. He's 57 years old. He actually contacted us because he's been waiting for a trial. It's a murder trial for 10 and a half years. He's been sitting at the Cook County Jail. And as you know, the jail's not equipped really to handle inmates for that length of time. Usually it's 2-3 years tops. Mm-hmm. And they're then moved to a prison if they're found guilty or they're let go. But this guy has been in there for 10 and a half years. And when I called the public defender's office and reached out to the state's attorney's office, one of the things that they alluded to, because they didn't come out and say this, but they alluded to the possibility that maybe he is the one who is slowing down the process. They said that each time they get close to going to trial, he has fired his public defender. He's now on his third attorney. So then I took that explanation over to Sheriff Tom Dart, and I also took it to the inmate, and I got to talk to him one-on-one, and Dart said, listen, there is no excuse for this. There is no way that a trial or a murder trial, in order for it to begin, should take 10 and a half years. He brought up the Dylann Roof case, and I don't know if you remember that one.
Sounds familiar.
Yeah, the South Carolina, the shooting at a church. Mm-hmm. It was this young man, Dylann Roof. That case, from the time that the crime was committed to the time that there was a sentence, a conviction and a sentence, that was 17 months. And he says that was a difficult climb. Here was someone who continued to fire their public defender, but yet how come in that case they were able to get a conviction in 17 months and we can't even start a trial here in 10 and a half years? So I think he made some interesting points.
I saw this and I just thought, how can that be? And you're right, even that simple explanation you were given, it doesn't add up, right? It seems like this man was obviously failed within the system. Something just went horribly wrong. And I've covered one case like this that this reminded me of, and why it struck me so strongly when I read it, of the Center for
Wrongful Convictions.
Yeah. Exactly right. Had represented a young man who was in lockup for 6 years without a trial, and this was a few years ago, and I just thought that was horrible. Turns out he was eventually acquitted. He was not guilty of anything that he had been held for 6 years for, but he got caught up in the system. And then I thought, now here's somebody for 10 years that this happened to.
And the more interesting part of all this, I mean, you said that you had this case that was 6 years, that Dart said that even though this seems to be one of the longest, is 10 and a half years, this is not the only case like this that's in there. He's got other people that have been waiting for 8 years, 6 years, 9 years. This just happens to be the longest wait, at least so far, that they can come up with. He said, I think that at one point they had somebody who had been in there for 12 years. And it really seems to be, from all the pieces that I've been able to put together, it's a combination of things, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not that the public defender's office failed them and didn't work on this. I think it's a combination of, one, you've got a difficult client. Two, the public defender's office is unresourced and understaffed. Sometimes things just kind of happen to fall through the cracks, right?
Right.
So it's a combo of things that just made for the perfect storm here.
When you talk to him, and I know you don't want to reveal everything. We want to watch it tonight.
Sure.
Is it 9 o'clock? At 9 o'clock, or what time will we
see?
Correct.
9 p.m. 9 p.m. tonight.
But did he give you the sense like, I want to get out of here as fast as I can? I mean, who wants to be in the Cook County lockup?
Yeah, and one of the things that he said is that, look, if I get to decide how I delay a trial, do you think I would delay it for 10 and a half years? I would have done this for 18 months. Or yeah, I don't want to spend the amount of time that I've spent in here. He wants to have a trial, he says, but he also wants to make sure that his attorneys are doing things accurately and properly. So he has become very savvy about the law system. And so he's been reading and reading cases and studying his case. And so when a public defender comes to him with something he doesn't agree with, he might fight back or might say, hey, you know, put in this motion, or maybe we need to do this. And I think that's where there's been a little bit of conflict.
Oh, so he's sort of running his case a little bit
inside.
Mm-hmm. Gee, that's so fascinating. Did you talk to any of his prior attorneys or anybody who had represented him in the past?
I didn't, because they're all through the public defender's
Got
office.
It.
And so once they say, no, we're not talking, I'm kind of stuck.
So did you get the sense from after you talking to him that there are quite a few others, maybe not 10 years, but that it would be shocking to most of us to even hear 2 or 3 years, I think, without a trial being held in Cook County Jail? Is there ever an issue of not being able to bond out? They can't afford it and that kind of thing? Because that's what you most commonly hear associated with cases like this. They just can't afford to post it.
Yeah, they can't afford to post it. Or in Mr. Daniel's case, it's a murder trial, or
sure,
it would be a murder charge.
So he's not allowed.
And he was considered, I guess, initially a flight risk, so he was denied bond. He's stuck there till he goes to trial.
Oh, my gosh. Mm-hmm. What a fascinating story. We'll watch for it tonight, Lourdes.
Thank you so much, Anna.
We will be watching you tonight at 9:10 and all the other times on WGN-TV. Lourdes Duarte, thank you for joining us. I'm glad to talk to you today.
You too.
Tell
you
Ben
too.
Bradley we love him, but we need a little more Lourdes on
you
the show.
You need a break every now and then.
That's right.
I get it. It's understandable.
Thank you so much. We'll talk. Right. We'll see you tonight.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right, back here on The Rokan Show with me, Anna DeVlantis. We are going to check in with Gretchen Carlson in just a moment. She is standing by with the book. She wrote the book, Be Fierce, Stop Harassment, and Take Your Power Back. And Gretchen Carlson, author, advocate, also former Fox News anchor, and one of the very outspoken and central voices of the Me Too campaign. We thank you for coming back on the show, Gretchen. I'm sorry, here we got you. There we go. Gretchen, can you hear us?
Yeah, I'm here. Thank you for having me.
Sorry, didn't have your mic up there. I apologize. So I'm just curious about your reaction with the breaking news in the Bill Cosby trial, the guilty on 3 counts, all counts, in the sexual harassment or sexual assault trial, excuse me, out of Pennsylvania. Your reaction to that verdict?
I feel like it's a great day for women. I'm not exactly sure how this may have played out if we weren't witnessing this cultural revolution right now. Obviously, the first trial was a hung jury, so it was a difficult decision back then. But I'm heartened by the verdict because I believe that it's part of this movement that we're experiencing right now, where women's voices are being heard, and more importantly, they're being believed.
You know, one of the things that came up is that they were deadlocked, the jury, in the first trial, and they made a difficult decision, the prosecution did, in the DA's office, to retry him. And one of the things that controversially was allowed to be part of this trial was statements from prior victims, women who had said similar things happened to them too. And many legal experts today were weighing in to say without that, they may not have gotten this conviction, because there was very little evidence, and it was very much Andrea Constand's word against Bill Cosby's. And would this have happened without the women all coming together? What do you think about that?
Well, in the first trial, they did not allow that to happen.
Right.
So that's a really important distinction. And it was up to the judge to rule whether or not they would allow having those additional witnesses. I mean, obviously, what we've seen play out since my story broke on July 6, 2016, is that, you know, one woman can make a difference, but together we rock the world, one of my favorite quotes. So obviously, in the whole Me Too movement now as well, you're seeing that collectively when voices come together, there's strength in numbers. And I think that it's just a natural reaction to know that when a jury can hear that quite possibly this was happening to more than just one woman, that, of course, you know, that's going to probably change the way that they look at the entire case. I think what's really heartening to me, though, is the fact that there were 7 men on this jury, and mm-hmm. there were 5 women. And, you know, I just want to read to you a message I got on DM today on Twitter, because this is what has made me realize that my mission is worthy. Mm-hmm. And it says this: "Hi, Gretchen. As you probably know, Bill Cosby was just convicted of sexual assault. I don't think he gets found guilty if it weren't for you and your courage, which I believe shed a supernova on sexual predators. I think jurors have also had their eyes open more as a result of what you did for those of us and for me. I admire you."
Well, I think there's no question that powerful voices like yours coming out to speak the truth about powerful men, in your case, have made a major difference in encouraging other women to come forward, because you've seen in many cases with people who are harassers, they don't just harass one person, they harass many people. But I want to ask you about something else. We've also seen that even if justice is delivered to a harasser in the fact of like losing a job, or in this case, and getting a guilty verdict, it seems as if the women who have come forward so far, you've talked about this, you lose your career, you report harassment, and then you don't necessarily get welcome back into the industry. That, you say, needs to change.
Of course, and that's why the message I just read affects me deeply, because it is such a humongous risk for women and for men who are victims to find the courage to come forward. You know, earlier this week, I was so proud to be able to make the announcement that I'm coming back to my career. And I'm, you know, been hired by A&E Networks and Lifetime to produce television specials.
Wow. And congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you. I mean, right now I have a bunch of other jobs too, because I wake up every morning with this mission as well, and trying to change legislation and so many other things going on. I'm also the chairwoman of the Miss America organization.
Oh my gosh.
On a volunteer basis. But this is huge. You know, this is huge personally for me, and it's a shout out to every woman and every man who's ever been a victim and had their career stolen from them. And mm-hmm. trust me, there are thousands and maybe millions, and they never work in their chosen profession ever again. And I wanted to be a beacon. I wanted to be a shining light, an example for anyone out there who's been through something similar, to know that you also can make a comeback. And that is crucial in this process. You know, let's stop talking about whether or not the predators are going to make a comeback. Let's saw that.
Did you see Charlie Rose's announcement that he wants to do a, you know, sort of a Q&A with people who have, you know, show that centers around mm-hmm. people who have been accused of harassment in the past, and that they should have their voices heard too, in this whole idea of, you know, getting better or doing better for the future? Do you agree that that should be okay?
No, I think it's a slap in the face to all of the women and men who have had to suffer at the hands of perpetrators. I mean, we as a society do a disservice when we actually print articles like that, unless you actually have quotes from people who say they want to do that. But I've seen other articles being printed just asking generally, you know, do you think accused men can make a comeback? Why don't we focus? That like falls right into the stereotypes and the myths in our society that should be okay. I mean, what about showcasing and doing articles about the thousands and possibly millions of women who aren't working anymore, and they didn't even do anything wrong?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they simply just had the courage to come forward. So society and culture has a responsibility in this as well, as does the media. And I want to thank the media for covering so many of these stories. So on the one hand, they've seriously helped the whole mission. But on the other hand, you know, to perpetrate stories like that, perpetuate stories, I mean, that, mm-hmm. that say that these people can possibly make comebacks is not necessarily, it sort of falls into the old stereotypes, is what I'm
Well, saying. Explain that to us, because I think people perhaps don't necessarily understand why that is so tough. I mean, here's someone like you, of course, with a very powerful voice and amazing experience, a veteran anchor, somebody who is recognizable with name recognition as well. It's, is there, is it, Was it troubled? I mean, was it difficult even now, you say, to just show up and get job offers? I mean, you're speaking of others around you, or are you having that experience, have had that experience as well?
Well, no, I'm saying that me being able to go back to the profession that I love and that I worked so hard to attain over 27 years is a huge, you know, accomplishment for me personally, but I think for me, it's more important that it's showing all these other women mm-hmm. who maybe didn't have a national platform that they, too, can have a chance at a comeback. Of all the women who reached out to me, and they were actually the impetus for my book, Be Fierce, because their stories had never been told, 99.9% of them never have worked in their chosen profession ever again.
But what do you think is happening there?
The courage to come forward.
What's happening
to
them?
What do I think is happening? Oh, because they get blackballed. I mean, this is why it's so upsetting to see articles about whether or not the perpetrator should come back. Because what happened to women for no reason at all is simply for having the courage to complain or come forward, they're troublemakers, they're blackballed, they're blacklisted, they're demoted, and promptly fired.
So what
that's usually what happens. And so, I mean, I could go on and on and on and on of the thousands of women who've reached out to me, mm-hmm. who then, you know, have this black mark against them for doing nothing wrong except having courage and bravery to come forward. And they have to either recreate themselves or they never work again.
Right.
And that is what we must fix in society on this, and stop talking about whether or not the perpetrators can be rehabbed, but talk about the shattered lives and American dreams of women in every walk of life, by the way, from waitresses to Wall Street bankers to lawyers to teachers to members of our military to police officers to firefighters. I could go on and on.
Right.
It's pervasive and everywhere.
And thanks to you, it is being taken more seriously, and I do believe you are one of the voices that have made a major difference. You're also impacting legislation, I know. Can you just bring us up to speed on what it is you're working for there, Gretchen?
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. So in December, we were successful in introducing a bipartisan bill in the House and the Senate to give women a choice of whether or not, when they are being harassed, unfortunately, on the job, if they want to go to an open jury process or go to the secret chamber of arbitration. That is one of the ways in which we have kept this entire issue silent over the last couple of decades, because when you're forced into arbitration, you can never tell anyone whatever happened to you.
Right.
So it was incredibly important that we got a bipartisan bill. Now I'm working on trying to get more co-sponsors. I'll be in D.C. actually again tomorrow to meet with senators and members of the House. Mm-hmm. So we need to get it passed, and then we needed to get it signed by the president. So it's still a work in progress, but when there's a mission in front of me, I usually go for it. So I'm
go get them, Gretchen.
Thank you
for all the work you do to help with men and women in this country, and what you've done so far and what you will do in terms of the legislation you've just talked about. The book, we should mention, your book is Be Fierce, Stop Harassment, and Take Your Power Back. Gretchen Carlson, thank you so much for giving us some of your time today.
Thanks for having me. Take care.
All right, Judy's News is coming up in 2 minutes here on WGN. This spring, get to know Joe. Joe Donlin joins Micah Mateer weekdays on WGN TV News at 5, 6, 9, and 10.
Throw Con Show with Anna DeBlantis right here on 720 WGN.
Welcome back, Ro.
Thank you.
Missed
Ro, you've
you.
Been quiet for
oh, wait,
the last
Ro,
minutes.
Were you not here?
I know.
He fell asleep like the Cosby attorney for
right.
a little while.
Oh, my God, yeah. Mistrial. That was a, I just arrived.
Uh-huh. Literally.
Literally. I just landed and got in the car and got here as quickly as I could. I had been attending, I attended a funeral in California for Lee Ermey. Mm-hmm. And a personal friend, but also a guy that was on the show a lot.
Yeah.
And just returning back now. And I'm on, luckily, A.B. Stoddard joining us right now. Luckily, all morning on the four-hour flight back from L.A., they had the DirecTV on the flight.
Oh, good. You know, a lot happened.
And it was it's fun to watch. Like the news with a whole other bunch of people watching it around you.
Because you see the reactions.
Yes. And like the Cosby thing, I was like, oh my God.
Did people react like that?
Yeah, people are like and then the replays of the Fox Morning Show that we, you know, that we're running. Can I just ask you, AB? I know we haven't seen a whole lot like this ever before. But even by Trumpian standards, the Fox and Friends performance this morning by him was a little over the top.
I think he was frightening the curvy couch, actually, for the first time in a long time. I sensed that they felt unsafe. They were trying to discourage him from watching cable and change the subject. They're telling him that they're running out of time.
Yeah. Hold on, let me play that
in
for you.
With the president.
Let me play that for you. I would like to, because this is really the moment. He was on such a roll screaming about, you know, James Comey being a liar, and then he went after McCabe for taking money from the from Terry McAuliffe, and he said it was his wife's campaign that took money from a political action committee run by Terry McAuliffe. And it was, you know, but by the time it was over, it was Hillary Clinton's paying McCabe money, which, you know, isn't remotely even accurate. But that's not even really the point. The point is you've got the three anchors of Fox and Friends look like a truck was sliding into them.
Yeah.
And they were being told in their ear, cut it off, cut it off, cut it off.
The president seems so angry.
The FBI loves me. But the top people in the FBI, headed by Comey, were crooked. You look at McCabe, where he takes $700,000 from somebody supporting Hillary Clinton. He takes $700,000 for his wife's campaign. And by the way, didn't even spend that money. They kept some of it, because under that law, she took seven. He took $700,000 from a group headed by Terry McAuliffe, who was under investigation by McCabe and the FBI, and that investigation disappeared. He took $700,000. And you look at the corruption at the top of the FBI, it's a disgrace. And our Justice Department, which I try and stay away from, but at some point I won't. Our Justice Department should be looking at that kind of stuff, not the nonsense of collusion with Russia. There is no collusion with me and Russia.
Okay.
And everyone knows it.
Everyone, we talked to you all day, but
they were telling him something in their ear there.
Yeah, but we got to go. We got to go. They cut him off. Now, there are people already on the social media, as I've noticed, who are saying, well, you know, of course, they had to get to a commercial break and there's a computer break and all the rest of that. That is complete horse poop, because if you have a situation like that, they'll clear the decks, right? They stop that. They can turn that computer off and they will clear the decks and go as long as they want to go. So the question really becomes this. Do you think that the White House was calling Fox and going, get them off? Get him off. Get him off.
That's an interesting question, because we very much know from the almighty Maggie Haberman that this is exactly what the White House has been trying to stop for weeks and months. No calling into Fox and Friends. No calling into Fox and Friends. And he, you know, he's gone rogue, so he doesn't get told no anymore. John Kelly, the chief of staff, doesn't filter anything anymore. There's no vetoes over his impulses, and so he called in, he stayed on forever, and he was really shrieking. I mean, even for Trump, I haven't really heard him shouting at that level in a really long time.
That was the part that I think struck you, is that it just sort of felt, you know, like you didn't really know where he was going to go. It was like a train that could have gone off the tracks, it seemed like, if they hadn't cut the whole thing short.
Really? It could have gone off the tracks?
Well, I think it could have gone farther off the tracks.
All right. So now there a couple of other things. This is not getting a lot of news because everything else that's happening today. But Emmanuel Macron, or as the president calls him, Emmanuel, because I love that movie series in the 70s. He leaves the country and then he basically calls the Iran policy insane. That if the president wants to get out of the Iranian nuclear deal, that's insanity, or whatever the French word for that would be.
You could tell in his, you could tell that there was like a whole sort of pyramid of plans for what he would say when in the trip, and there was the watch the president call the thing insane, then get him in private for an hour, then Trump comes out with him at the presser and is definitely calmed down. Macron is making a play for a new framework, a new, basically an amendment to the Iran deal that would allow President Trump to recertify it by saying it's actually different now. And then you have his address to Congress the next day, where he basically says, you know, try not to resist, try not to embrace Trumpism. Don't be protectionist. Don't embrace misinformation. Don't be nationalist. We have to stick to this, you know, world order that has brought us peace and prosperity, and we can't, you know, fear science, and we can't use, I mean, it was quite obvious and not subtle. And then he had the nerve to meet with a bunch of reporters afterwards, during which he said, yeah, you know, you can't get out of the Iran deal. He basically said that we can't get a deal with the North Koreans if we get out of the Iran deal on May 12th because they won't believe a thing that we do, and that he had told the president that, he tells the reporters on a record. And he says, but I think the president's going to get out of it. So he made sure that as he left town, he was the truth teller he wanted to be before he went home to face the French press, which was very concerned with the fact that the president of the United States basically tried to take a big swat at him by pretending that he had dandruff.
Yeah, that was weird. That I got.
They were so close. The body language was just—I mean, it was remarkable to watch it. You don't usually
imagine
see that.
That he did that. That he did that to the president of France. He said, "I just get the dandruff off your shoulder."
What?
Would it be more insulting?
That is it. That I mean, I know that move. I've seen people do that. That's
but
that's
what is that?
The,
is it a power move?
It's a power move. It's a move of, hey, let me, you know, let me help
knock you
out
down
here.
10 levels.
Yeah. Let me. You know, you're disheveled. Look at how beautiful I am. You're disheveled.
To you. Word dandruff. Yeah. I mean, imagine the French, how horrified they are.
They probably are.
Yeah.
AB, what about, let's talk about the one pick bowing out with the Ronnie Jackson at VA, and then you've got Mike Pompeo confirmed by the hair of his chinny chin chin today, just barely passing. What message are Democrats sending there? What do you make of the closeness of this vote that it was, you know, that it was this close?
Well, you know, there's this joke on the House side, particularly on the Republican side. It's called that whenever the Freedom Caucus, you know, like opposes something, they wait to make sure that it has the votes to pass, and it's called the vote no, hope yes, you know, maneuver. And I think the Democrats in the Senate were going to make sure that Mike Pompeo passed, because the very burning question on everyone's mind is who would be next? Because the criteria for Trump's choices from now on, he's made perfectly clear, is not qualifications first, it's comfort first.
Right.
You have to be my friend, I have to love you, and we have to have chemistry, and we have to get along very well, Ronnie Jackson, Mike Pompeo, and then we'll get to your resume later. And so it was very clear all along that he was going to get some red state Democrats. In the end, of course, you know, he got more than enough, but it was because I just believed all along that they were going to make a lot of hemming and hawing, you know, about Mike Pompeo making anti-LGBT statements sometime in this past, but that they knew he was more than qualified, and that he is absolutely, you know, probably the best pick that they were going to see.
That they're going to get from the president.
Choices.
Yeah, there's no question about it. I just want to go to Ronnie Jackson for a second.
Yeah, there's a lot there.
Because the president then, you know, when he was on Fox and Friends today, was like, oh, this is a bunch of lies. This is a bunch of lies. The problem when the president says that is that there will now Ronnie Jackson has stepped aside. So I don't know if we're going to see the evidence on this, but the president, by keeping it alive and calling it a lie. Oh, and then, by the way, also saying, yeah, that really not a very big piece of my legal team was Michael Cohen. Like, I did a little stuff, that, which, of course, then opened up the Department of Justice, who is going after Michael Cohen, to then go to court today and go, oh, yeah, let's get the special master, because he's not really an attorney for Donald Trump. He just said it on Fox and Friends. So, yeah, let's do that so we can basically get all the stuff we have on the computer as discovery, because it's not going to be in any way protected by privilege.
Yeah, this is it's just so unbelievable. I just was thinking later on about the phone conversation when he got off the phone and asked Rudy Giuliani how he did, because he basically said, when Michael Cohen represented me in the crazy Stormy Daniels deal.
Right, deal.
After saying
deal.
10 days ago that he doesn't know anything about it.
Yeah.
And then, of course, he basically said there is no attorney-client privilege because he didn't really do any legal work for me ever.
Yeah, brilliant.
So you're right. I mean, he's so good at basically, I mean, he's just so self-destructive when he gets on his high horse and is blowing hard. And this is precisely why they're trying to keep him off of the airwaves. And they're so afraid that he's going to get into some, like, macho standoff with Bob Mueller.
Yeah.
And tell him a thing or two about, like, in his own legal expertise, what he thinks of such and such about McCabe taking money from Terry McAuliffe. I mean, it's just unbelievable.
We'll leave it there. There you go. There's your high horse blow right there. Oh. All right. Thank you. That was a blowhard right there. Thank you. Appreciate
thank you,
it.
Bye. Thank you.
All right. A.B. Stoddard, you can read her on Real Clear Politics right now. We've got Judy telling us what's coming up at the top of the hour. Lester Holt from the NBC Nightly News joins us right now on the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. All right, Lester, I'm going to let Anna read something to you.
Oh, yeah, I got to get this. Hold on.
I don't know if you have seen it yet. You know, the president has tweeted about Bill Cosby.
Oh, I missed that.
Did he?
Okay. It just happened. So we figured that this probably has news relevance.
Yeah.
Because the president is on a tear. I think the president high-fived himself when he got off Fox and Friends this morning. Like, I did a great job. Boy, did I do a great job. And, you know, the reason I think that is because of what he tweeted about Bill Cosby.
Mm-hmm.
Anna, would you like to share this with us?
Yeah, I'm having trouble calling it up here.
No. All right. Unless you took it right back. Unless
it might have been deleted. Is that possible?
I don't see it. I'm looking for it.
It moments ago, and then...
Do tell.
Is it possible that
Wait a minute. I'm supposed to be giving you guys the headlines, but in this case...
No, it just happened.
Basically, what he said in the tweet was, I was never a big fan of Bill Cosby's. Of course, right? Because, I mean, who was, right? Who was in the day ever a fan of Bill Cosby?
Everybody was
right?
a fan.
I was never a fan of Bill Cosby's, but if you're innocent, don't stay quiet.
But, yeah, that it's telling you something when you do that. If you stay quiet, that you're sending a signal.
Right.
That's my advice that I would give to you.
Is it up or is it
right
gone?
To remain silent.
I think that's an old tweet that resurfaced from a while back.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yes, but he had tweeted that out
before. Okay. All right. Whew. So okay.
People called it up and were obviously retweeting it.
That's why everyone's retweeting it, because he just said, here's some advice.
Well, I hate when you guys know more stuff than me. That's why I was panicking.
Usually it's the other way around, but still kind of fascinating, you know.
Well, let's start with the Cosby verdict here for a second.
Sure.
I know earlier on, Anna was talking to Gretchen Carlson about this because she's one of the more famous of the Me Too people that, you know, at the beginning of the movement. And I think there's a lot of people, including all of the victims here of Bill Cosby, who are celebrating today. But this is going to have a lot of resonance because he's the first major criminal conviction in a situation like this.
Well, you're right, and you had so many women who came forward and told similar stories, but this is the one and only criminal case against him. So, you know, there was a lot riding on this verdict. A lot of women would have, you know, wanted to see criminal charges, but the statute of limitations had passed. But, you know, we were watching the camera just outside the courtroom, and women coming out of that, women who were among the accusers coming out and hugging and crying, and it was a pretty emotional scene there today.
It was, and then we saw Bill Cosby himself speak out and use an expletive in court today. He wasn't happy with the way they were trying to revoke his bail, I believe.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
The prosecutor was trying to get him thrown in jail right away, and mentioned that he had a private plane. And according to the reports from inside the courtroom, Cosby essentially shouts out, "I don't have a private plane," and then called the prosecutor
an a-hole. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, yeah. I'll say it for you, Lester. Don't worry about it.
You're always there for me, bro.
Of course. But you know what's funny about this, Lester, was that on cable news, mm-hmm. which they have different rules on cable news for what they can say and do, that they were using the full word and they were like
loudly
screaming it out. Like, you know, this woman did like a dramatic reenactment of what Bill Cosby sounded
and
like.
And then called attention to it, saying, "I'm using that special emphasis on that special expletive because that's how it was said." But it was
and remember, we were using that term not too long ago with what was it in regard to the... trying to remember.
Was it Rex Tillerson?
Well, we were using, yeah, but we also used the S-hole.
That one.
That's what I'm thinking of.
Yeah. From the president, you know, referring to, you know, the blank hole countries that he doesn't feel.
That's right.
He doesn't feel like he doesn't want those people coming to America. Yeah. All right. So I just, you know, you wonder, I mean, Bill Cosby, especially, you know, people of a certain age grew up with him as a dad. He was America's dad.
Sure. No, I mean, I remember the original Bill Cosby show back in the, I guess it was the late 60s.
Yeah.
I mean, Cliff Huxtable was, I mean, you know, who didn't like Cliff Huxtable?
Right. He was one of the most lovable guys in America. Absolutely. I think at one point he was considered the most trusted American, right? And
when he had a show interviewing kids, that was one of his specialties. You think about that. Yeah. He was just this lovable dad.
Right. And now, you know, has fallen. I guess the real question here is, I know that you'll have, you know, more on this tonight in the NBC Nightly News, but yeah, he's looking at 30 years. It's unlikely that he will be sentenced concurrently in this. He probably, you know, it will be a combined sentence, right, of the three cases. And
yeah.
I doubt, and at his advanced age and lack of a flight risk here, they let him go, which is unbelievable. He's out of jurisdiction, and they let him go home tonight after being convicted of, you know, and this is a major felony, right? It's sexual assault, criminal
sure
sexual
it is,
assault.
Yeah. I mean, each one is potentially 10 years, but, you know, at 80, you know, it seems like any sentence of, you know, more than 10 years is,
sure.
You know, he spends the rest of his life there.
I would even argue more than 5 if you're in the prison system, and it would be the state prison system in Pennsylvania. This is not a federal case.
And he's lost a lot of his sight, too. It's worth noting.
Right.
But I don't think, you know, many people are frankly shedding tears, you know, for him right now. I think this is... You know, these were pretty horrid accusations.
Mm-hmm. Right. And now convicted thereof.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you saw him coming out of the courtroom and he kind of held someone next to him just to kind of walk. And at first it seemed as if he was just being overcome with emotion by what had just happened in the courtroom. But you're right, Lester. I think it was more an eyesight thing, getting up and downstairs, just trying to get out of there.
Yeah.
That's something.
Yeah.
All right. And then back to, I know tonight on the NBC Nightly News, you're also going to be talking about Donald Trump this morning by basically saying that Michael Cohen, you know, has a very little, very small piece of his legal, of his legal work.
Yeah, tiny, tiny percentage, and boy, did the feds jump right on that because it strengthens their argument. Now, all this stuff that they got from Michael Cohen, that hey, maybe we should be able to expedite our look at that material. So, you know, once again, by speaking out, he may have complicated the legal situation.
You know, there's no question that he did. The problem, though, is that doesn't mean what he said. He worded it even as seemingly at times bumbling in articulation as the president can be. When you parse it out for legal purposes, it almost always lines up perfectly for keeping open an interpretation that lawyers can jump into the breach of and make an argument for. And in this particular case, he's saying, listen, he has a small piece of my big, all the legal people, you know, all my real estate and everything else. I got all these lawyers. He does a little piece of the legal. But he did acknowledge, though, that he's the Stormy Daniels guy. He's doing the Stormy Daniels deal. And he said deal. Which,
yeah, I mean, if anything, he's helping her, perhaps.
Yes.
You know.
Yeah.
Well, that's true. Her attorney, Avenatti, said, thank you, Fox and Friends, for having Mr. Trump on this morning to discuss Michael Cohen.
Yeah, but the president, if you heard it, the president was fired up today. I mean, he had a lot he wanted to get off his chest today.
Yeah.
He did.
Oh, boy, did he ever. And then I guess the story that would be a top story, but you know how these things go now in this news cycle, the Ronny Jackson story that he has officially now pulled out of being the a nominee for the Veterans Administration position, Secretary of Veterans Affairs. I just stop and you think, wow, that didn't seem like it was a good idea in the first place. But now this poor guy is going back to his job. We're told, is NBC confirmed that he's going back to his job as the doctor at the White House?
I don't know if that's 100% confirmed, but you know, he listened. They were right in that he had had glowing, you know, reviews in the past as a doctor. But you have to remember the first issue that was raised, which was not a small issue, was the experience one, which even the president a couple of days acknowledged. You know, there was an experience quote problem. But these other accusations, you know, he calls them unfounded and you know, suggests that they were made up. These stories that, you know, he was drinking and wrecked a government car and doling out pills like Skittles. I mean, these are pretty serious charges. But it just seemed the winds were against him. The president, though, seems confident he's got someone else he'll offer up for that job. But, you know, let's keep in mind, this is an agency that, you know, services, what, 9 million veterans.
Right, it's the third largest single agency in the government.
And not an agency without problems.
Yeah, and that's the thing. And it's had some huge problems. So, I mean, there is a leadership vacuum there right now. So this is not an area that they can take a lot of time. They need to fill that job.
Lester, do we hear you have a big gig this weekend? Is there something going on with the Lester Holt and the Rough Cuts? Because everyone knows you for your, you know, being the big anchor of the NBC Nightly News. Yeah. But you're also, you got a little band and you got a big gig coming up.
This is our first road tour. We've never gone more than 20 blocks, but yes, I'm in a band here. We call ourselves the Rough Cuts. We're all NBC News employees, and this weekend is the big White House Correspondents' Dinner in Washington, and they have all these different events, including the White House Correspondents' Jam. So it's going to be some other media bands.
Kevin Bacon's got his band performing.
Yeah, the Bacon Brothers are gonna perform there. So, I'm gonna take tomorrow off.
That's very fun. That's right.
DC.
The Kevin Bacon band. We had Kevin and his brother in once to talk about their band and their greatest single is a song called Hookers and Blow.
So listen in for
one. Yeah. They'll play it. It's a great song actually, it's perfect for the White House Correspondents' Dinner. That's all I'm going to say. It's perfect for what's happening in Washington. It's just perfect. We are America's falling apart.
Yeah, we're all going to go kick it back. You'd love the bands. Not only is there an NBC band, there's a Wall Street Journal band. Oh. There's a CNBC band. I never, when I think of Wall Street Journal, I think of these very serious people.
Should it be a string quartet?
I don't exactly. That's what you would think, but no, it's very exciting, and it's nice to have something else in your life you can kick back with.
Yeah.
And we deal with enough difficult stories, and my group and I try to get away once or twice a week and rehearse, and it's fun. It's going to be fun being on a big stage.
All right, well, have fun. Have fun.
Thank
we'll
you.
Talk to you next week,
Thanks,
Lester. Thank you very much, my friend.
All right, you guys, take care.
See Lester Holt tonight on the NBC Nightly News, coming your way at 5:30 on NBC 5. Right now, Judy Pilak has got the WGN News coming your way in about 5-6 minutes. What's happening there?
This week on Chicago's best deck party. Start the clock and prep your stomach. Elliot is taking on Big Burgers and the largest pizza. It's Elliot's Best Food Challenges, Sunday night at 10 on WGN-TV.
Yeah!
Patio life, back.
Yep, it's back.
You missed it yesterday. Violetta gets the gold star because somehow she was able to make perfect sense row of a Kanye tweet that no one understood. She just able to take it.
It was like that moment at the end of a movie when all the pieces come together. And I don't know, somehow the Kardashians were involved and Trump and Kanye.
And she explained it.
It made sense at the time, but I couldn't explain
it
to you.
Well, all of us read it and we just thought, well, that doesn't make any sense. And then Violette, of course, was able to explain the whole
connection. I know that Kim has weighed in. I was in the Kardashian territory last night for dinner. And it was I have come to a decision about humanity from going to one of those kind of Kardashian hangouts last night in Los Angeles for dinner.
Mm-hmm. A little swanky, trendy place.
Yeah, and like old and new all at the same time. Mm-hmm. But it's where like all the Insta celebs and young ladies on the rise. You could not get in the place because everybody was taking a picture of themselves taking one more step. That was it. And they were tweeting out or instaing tweeting. That's it for them. They were on Instagram saying, showing their shoes as they made one more step toward the big, there's in LA and Miami now, you don't have a door. It's just a curtain. Uh-huh. It's a curtain to go in anywhere.
Yeah, it's nice weather. You don't need a door.
Right. So a big curtain and then a guy with a headset, with the earpiece in and a black suit. Are you on the list? I'm like, do I look like I'm on the list?
Like, no, sir, you don't look like you belong here.
Right. But luckily the people I was with were on the list. And I couldn't believe, and everybody is posing into the camera. They're all doing the thing where they're sucking in their cheeks and they're tilting their head and they're taking pictures of themselves in line.
Well,
classic duck face selfie. Did you do the same, bro?
I did. I actually tweeted out my duck face selfie.
We'll have to look for that.
Yeah, I had one of those this morning. I sent out the thing with the people.
The people.
And we did. And they're literally, I swear to God. Okay, at the valet station at this place, you get to go into a little hut that has a couch in it where you can do selfies in the hut outside of this restaurant.
Oh, no. How soft can you get?
The I don't know.
Perfect there. And you're just like, ugh, why do you need
Well, it keeps you away from TMZ.
Oh.
So you're allowed to go into like the little area so that the celebrities don't have to worry about TMZ.
Oh, gee.
I ran out. I go, hey, don't you know who I am?
Hey, TMZ,
over
here.
Yeah, they didn't seem to know. They didn't seem to care. No. Hmm. No. Doughy white guy from Chicago, talk show host. Not interested. Move on. Some drug addicted 18-year-old, you know, super
waif. With a YouTube channel.
Yeah, with a YouTube channel. They're the ones they're going after. Not me. All right, Judy's standing by. She's got the WGN news coming right too. Ro Contra with Anna DeBlantis right here on 720 WGN. All right, let me just tell you something here. We had this previously scheduled, and I wanted to keep this, even though there's crazy stuff going on in the news today.
Mm-hmm.
And we will get right back to that. Obviously, the Bill Cosby now convicted, 3 counts of sexual assault convicted in a Pennsylvania courtroom today. And then you got the president losing his poop on television this morning.
Fox and Friends appearance.
A ton of fallout from that. But I saw this book and I started reading it and I'm like, oh my God, this is my kind of Chicago story right here. It's called Mob Adjacent, a Family Memoir, and it's Jeffrey and Michael Gentile. And these are a couple of guys who, you know, grew up in a house where, you know, the family's in a business, they're living their life, and the family, their dads and their uncles, they all have friends, and they all come over to the house, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, they just come over to the house.
That doesn't sound really wrong
anyway. You're like,
what's unusual?
Guys of a certain age, I mean, that's, you know, your parents used to have people, no one went out, people would come over, and then people may making dinner or whatever it was, and these two kids, you know, when they were like, you know, 8, 9, 10, 12, 13, they'd hand them, you know, like you'd come in the winter, you'd hand them a coat, they'd take the coat up into the bedroom, and what would happen?
The gun fell out.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
And it goes skating across the linoleum floor in the kitchen. And the concern wasn't, oh, my God, there's a gun on the floor in the kitchen. It was, whose pocket does it belong into?
Because you got to return the right gun to the right pocket in your family.
That's one of the rules. You learn that very early on when you grow up in a family like ours. You got to put the right gun in the right pocket.
All right, so let's talk about this, because you were kids and you grew up in a mob adjacent family. We should make it clear what that means, actually.
Mob adjacent means our father, through geography and happenstance, grew up with the next generation of post-Capone Chicago mobsters. Mm-hmm. He was never in the mob, but he knew people.
Like the Tony Accardo people.
Like Sam Giancana and Jackie Cerrone kind of people. Yeah. And these were the people who filtered in and out of our home as casually as the mailman and the milkman. And we didn't think anything of it. It was just, while we wrote the book, a lot of things changed. You know, you're a writer yourself. One thing never changed, the first line of the book. Normal is what happens every day. And it wasn't until we went out into the world and started meeting people from outside of our little insular universe that we realized how unique our experience was.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I'd say. Well, it's interesting because that era, and we can go to, you know, Giancana. It's interesting because Giancana plays kind of a major role in that Kennedy's thing that CNN has been doing.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Because he was very involved in the system with Frank Sinatra and Momo Giancana and Jack Kennedy.
Joe Kennedy.
Well, it starts with Joe Kennedy, but it works its way to Jack Kennedy.
Of course.
Because at one point, Jack Kennedy was having sex with the same woman that Sam Giancana was having sex with.
Judith Exner.
Do you talk about that in the book, this kind of detail?
No, we don't mention that in the book at all, but what comes up mostly in the book is our experience with the whole Sam Giancana, Frank Sinatra thing was our dad had a nightclub on Mannheim Road in the 60s.
Oh, boy.
And it was Glitter Gulch. It was Vegas in the Midwest. And directly to the south of my dad's place was the Sahara. It was a Las Vegas-type spot right here in Chicago.
Right.
Frank Sinatra and the Rat Pack played. Everybody, Louis Prima and Keeley Smith played there. And because Dad's place
It was a nightclub. Like,
and it was right next door, and it was in the basement. It was a perfect spot for Mr. Giancana to give his 2 cents to Mr. Sinatra. And we were there on a couple of occasions where Jeff would say, that's the guy from television. And he'd go down and Dad would shoo us out. Uh-huh. And we could hear, certainly not the content, but the raised voices of Giancana murdering Sinatra about that lying son of a gun, Joe Kennedy. And if you remember the whole scenario, they went and said to the Chicago guys, we need Jack to get Illinois. So, you know, we have a political machine here, or at least we
did.
We've
heard of it.
It was probably more active in the 60s.
Yeah.
And they swung the election. They got.
There's no question about it.
I'm not making this up or uncovering any secrets. And Joe Kennedy did an exact opposite of what he said. They let Jack hire Bobby to be.
And they went after the mob.
Oof. Murdered him.
Yeah.
And this was a point of content for them. And years later, Jeff and I had.
And we should point out, too, this is the important part of that story, why Sinatra plays into this. Because Sinatra was the celebrity guy who was backing Jack Kennedy, and he was doing concerts for him, and he was doing fundraising for him, and he was going town to town, and is asking all of his guys, whether it was in New York, the outfit in New York,
absolutely,
or the outfit here, asking these guys to, because the Chicago mob built Las Vegas. I mean, by the way, you want a Netflix series, it's this right here.
You're not
here,
kidding. Right? I'm riveted, but so, the stories you must have.
The Chicago mob was, you know, they built the Stardust Hotel, they did all this stuff using the Teamster Pension Fund, essentially, which
absolutely,
they looted, mm-hmm, to build these hotels. And Giancana was right in the middle of it. And somehow, and I just, this is the part I still don't get, somehow Jack Kennedy is still having sex with the same woman that Momo Giancana is having sex with, and yet he's turned his brother on the mob to blow them up. So it's one of those things where it's, you know, like you see today. There's people doing the wrong thing and doing the right thing all at the same time.
All at the same time. There was a terrific story that came up in the course of research, and it was about how there's a very famous piece of film of Bobby Kennedy grilling Sam Giancana in front of the McClellan hearings,
right,
and Giancana starts giggling. And Bobby starts attacking him. I thought only little girls giggled, Mr. Giancana. And according to Giancana, the night before, Bobby had been in a hotel room with Sam Giancana negotiating for the outfit's support for Jack's presidential run. The next day, for the cameras, he goes after Giancana viciously, verbally. And all Giancana could do is laugh at the hypocrisy.
Oh, wow.
You know, we lived through those days, Ro and Anna. We were like little mini princes. My dad had this nightclub, and we would grab up a kid from the neighborhood each and be able to go there and swim and hang out. And they had this
big, there was a hotel there too,
swimming,
right? There was
a swimming pool. Yeah. And he would give us a waitress, and she would take care of us all day. And they would hold all these in clandestine meetings because they called the place the basement because it was a story and a half down, and it was dark and black, and it was a nondescript place as opposed to the Sahara.
Right.
And all of the, you know, when Jack Cerrone had to get a couple of guys in to say something, he'd bring them there because my dad was his fixer.
Your dad was his fixer.
Would you
describe your dad? Because this is the part in the book, and people should get this book because if you love Chicago and you like stories like this, it's called Mob Adjacent: A Family Memoir, and you go on the internet to get this thing, right?
I mean, you can get it on our website, mobadjacent.com. It's also available on
Amazon in paperback and Kindle.
Yeah. Okay. All right. There you go. But this is the thing. So was your dad? I mean, how do you feel about your dad now that you know what's really?
I know,
put it in the context of it.
I know one thing for sure. He probably wouldn't have supported this as much as our mom would have.
Yeah.
Because of the Silence is Golden program, and our dad was. I tried to explain it the last time we were with someone. If the Chicago outfit was a swimming pool, our family and my dad got to put just our little toesies in the pool. We got to get all of the advantages that came out of that. But the reason my dad was so valuable is because he never was convicted of a crime.
So you got funneled legitimate business, not illegitimate
business. All legitimate business is my dad.
Funneled, because like, you were in the produce business, right?
Yeah, he was in the 40s.
Yeah.
And when he got out of the army, the Korean War, he got into the hospitality business with Skip and Jimmy Cerrone. those were guys from our neighborhood who were considerably older than Dad, but because he was always such a stand-up guy and everybody in the neighborhood knew him, and his dad was, our grandpa was kind of a legend.
Yeah.
If you read how he got his arm adjacent, it's kind of a cool story. And
you should tell that story, actually. Could you hold on just 1 second?
Absolutely.
Because we'll come back. And you could tell that story, and I always imagine moments like this. I'm imagining a guy in a truck who's driving through the Chicago radio market right now on his way from somewhere in the east to somewhere in the west, and I wonder what's going on in Chicago radio. And you hear this, and you can only hear it in Chicago radio. And he will tell the story for the rest of his life. I'm driving through Chicago, and they're talking about the mob,
and the
gun falls out of the guy's pocket. They don't know which pocket to put it back in because they're 10 years old.
They had Frank Sinatra in their basement,
right? And then all of a sudden, this guy named Gene, whatever his name is like screaming at Frank Sinatra because he screws up the 60 election.
And the Kennedys are involved. I mean, it's just. Wow.
And they're talking Rich. About it. They're talking about it like it's no big deal.
Normal's what happens every day.
There you go. I There's your answer. Line. Mob adjacent, a family memoir. Go get it right now if you love Chicago. If you're in the sound of my voice, we'll come right back with the Gentilles. But first, Judy tells us what's coming up at the top of the hour.
Hey, guess what? Dan Hampton joins the Steve Cochran Show tomorrow morning at 7:40 to talk about the Bears and how they did in day one of the draft.
Oh, boy.
Getting nervous.
Boy. All right. Well, we'll see. Don't get ahead of yourselves here. All right, we got the Gentile brothers here, Jeff and Michael Gentile, who have written a book called Mob Adjacent, a Family Memoir, which is, I mean, you just cannot put it down. It is crazy. These stories are going on. If you know, especially, I think this thing will do very well in Chicago. It will do well in New York. It will do well in any place where you grew up in a town where there were people who were involved in things, especially, you know, you live in the west side or the west suburbs, right, of a certain age, and you're like, Oh, I knew those guys. And, you know, there's still guys from Elmwood Park who run around and scream that they were in the mob, who were never in the mob because they thought it was cool. Turns out that you grew up in a mob family, and now you've written a book, which is the ultimate, right, in sort of
validation.
But you also talked about silence. Silence is king, right? So you thought you must have felt conflicted.
Well, the truth of the matter is, when we started doing this, there are still people in Chicago in that business.
Yeah.
And knowing them and being mob adjacent all these years, I gathered up a box of raspberries. It's an 82-year-old guy. He knew my dad. He knows me for...
Yeah.
And I said, listen, my brother and I got this idea. What do you think? He said, you're not going to uncover any secrets, are you? I said, I don't know any secrets. He says, well, that being said, everyone you're talking about's dead. Do whatever you want.
Oh, wow.
He said it a little more colorfully.
Yeah, sure, that's true.
I took all the expletives out.
Let me tease this. We got about 2 minutes left. So tell me the story about your grandfather.
It started in 1943. By a coincidence, our grandfather lived across the street from the Black Hand boss of Little Italy. And he was the guy who took a collection from all the little independent business people every Friday.
Mm-hmm.
Grandpa was on his way down to the Southwater Market early in the morning, and he heard a scuffle, and he followed the sound, and he finds the Black Hand boss getting beat up by a couple of guys. And he was holding the engine crank for his old 1929 Ford.
It's just like Godfather 2, by the way. What's going
totally.
On?
It was that kind of guy.
It was the guy with the white suit, like
Fanucci.
Yeah.
But this was Vincent Benevento, and he was called the Cheese King of Chicago. Grandpa went in there with the tire iron and busted one of the guys on the head. Vincent got behind the other one, took care of him, and the Black Hand boss was grateful to Grandpa after that. Stopped collecting the tax from him during the war years. Mrs. Benevento would come across the street and give Grandma some extra ration coupons, and nobody bothered us. And that's how we became
mob
adjacent family. Never in, but always near.
What? Never in, but always near. Yeah. Oh, God. The other part of the story, too, is how great, like, if you needed tickets for anything, they were sitting in the front row, no matter what it was.
That was him. Yeah. That was him.
You know, they were in the union row.
Yeah,
I know. The guys in the box office were in the electricians union at the stadium and at the ballparks.
Yep.
And these guys had the unions.
You know, my favorite union in the town was the projectionist union.
Oh, that's a good
one. I don't
even
remember that.
Those are still good jobs.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's a good union.
Still around?
That's a good union.
Yeah, it's still around.
That's a good union. Yeah, so a lot of guys get their start with that. Yeah. All right.
So much to learn.
Yeah. Oh, wow. All right. Congratulations. Thank you for doing this.
Oh, thank you for inviting us. Thanks for
having us. It's fascinating, you guys.
Jeffrey and Michael Gentile. It's
either way.
Yeah, I know. But this way, because that's not an uncommon name in Chicago.
No, it's not.
Mob Adjacent, a family memoir. You can go to mobadjacent.com, or you can go to the Amazon and get it right there. So do that as well. She says we got a Violetta, you familiar with this?
Yes, I believe
you know
this
is song?
John Bon Jovi.
Mm-hmm.
So you just said his name wrong, but no, you know who he is, right?
The thing is, Twitter messes people up. I was looking at his Twitter handle, and it's Bon Jovi. I don't know, it's Bon Jovi.
John Bon Jovi.
It's Bon Jovi. Bon Jovi's the name of the band, and he's John Bon Jovi.
Oh, wait. I never even realized that. I thought his whole name was John Bon Jovi.
His name is John Bon Jovi, but the band is called Bon Jovi.
Oh.
Am I this old that I have to explain Bon Jovi to you?
I know who Bon Jovi is.
Swear to God.
Make you feel old. I didn't know that.
I'm embarrassed. I blanked on his name. I can't even believe it. Actually, in my series I told you guys about, the Baby Daddy series, the mom is obsessed with John Bon Jovi. And so Ben's middle name is Bon Jovi.
Okay. Coming up on the program.
So I should have known that, even from just my own reference.
Yes.
He used to own an arena football team, too.
Yeah.
Oh,
really?
About that.
Philadelphia Soul. Big Philly guy.
Well, he's a New Jersey guy. He's a southern New Jersey guy. Yeah, don't even go Philadelphia. That's going to make everybody mad.
So, there's a concert going on. John Bon Jovi's concert.
Yes.
And not just John. He's with the band, Bon Jovi.
You just say the Bon Jovi concert.
Okay.
I feel like this is English as a second language. I'm trying to explain like shorthand to her.
I feel like people are driving off the side of the road on the Ike right now.
Yeah.
They're crashing.
The traffic reporter is not helping traffic. Yeah.
Right. I mean, they cannot believe that.
Especially when they heard, you know, that concert that guy's having.
Yeah. How do you say his name again? Bon Jovi?
Bon Jovi.
Bon Jovi.
I was thinking of banjo.
Jovi. Yeah.
Oh, the Bon Jovi.
And that, yeah.
Okay. I mean, honest to God, I feel like 110 years old.
I feel super foreign.
Okay, good.
She knows.
All right, good.
It's not that you're old.
Okay, all right. Now, and Kevin, you know who Bon Jovi is, right?
Yeah, I know Bon Jovi.
Okay, all right, fine.
Okay.
Because have you been to a wedding? Well, because it's like the number one wedding song is the one we just played.
That's so true.
They only play Serbian songs to the ones I go.
Okay, all right. All right.
I feel like he just did a Super Bowl or something.
Oh, sorry.
John Bon Jovi?
Right, or he's on something. He's very relevant.
Boris has no clue who John Bon Jovi is.
No, during the break, I intercomed Kevin. I'm like, hey, what's the most popular John Bon Jovi song? And he started telling me all of them. I'm like, oh, right, because I was trying to make a tweet, and oh, man.
Oh, boy. Right. All right.
Some cultural things are lost on me.
Yes,
what can I say?
Right, but it's 5 o'clock.
It's the top five on the Rokan Show.
Five.
Let's go.
Four, three, two, one.
Now, it's the top five at five on the Rokan Show with Anna Tavlantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
Mm-hmm.
Let's do it.
Yeah, please.
Number five.
poor Orion got lost in the middle of that.
Yeah.
Orion, you want to say that again?
Number five.
That's better.
Thank you.
Oh, what just happened?
I think
I'm messing with you guys.
Yeah, now it's
now
in my head.
The whole show's got bad mojo.
All right. At number five, moments after Bill Cosby was found guilty on three counts of sexual assault against Andrea Constand, several others who have accused the comedian of sexual misconduct, Lily Bernard, one of them, stood in front of the courthouse and delivered this message to anybody, to all the cameras that were there. I mean, it was a gigantic amount of cameras and microphones that were surrounding them, and Gloria Allred was in the middle of it, and I don't know, that never makes me feel particularly good about anything, because when she's there, she scares me. But here is what one former, now alleged victim, because it's not a criminal conviction, Lily Bernard had to say.
It is not just a victory for the Commonwealth. It is not just a victory for the 62 of us publicly known Cosby survivors whom Gloria Allred has helped give a voice, it is also a victory for womanhood, and it is a victory for all sexual assault survivors, female and male. And I thank you all in the media. You are the pillars of democracy. Without you, none of this would have happened.
Well, don't overstate that. But yes, it did become basically an avalanche.
It did. And you think, though, what all of them have been through for what gain of their own, right? I mean, they went through one trial that deadlocked and then a second trial and telling their stories. People didn't believe them necessarily. I mean, there was they went through a lot. So you could see that emotion pouring out of them. She said, I can breathe again now, and restores her faith in the justice system.
You know, it's interesting because, you know, Hannibal Buress, Chicago-based comedian,
right?
Remember, it's
a powerful moment.
It sort of started with him because he was the guy. It was a guy who came out and said, mm-hmm. "Yeah, well, this is going on. Everybody knows,
no question." He made that rape joke on stage as part of his act, kind of referencing Cosby as a rapist, and that's what he said on stage. And then from there, that clip went viral, and it prompted a lot of women to come forward and sort of say, "Hey, this is what happened to me."
All right, checking. Well, wait, there's more. Wow, Nancy Grace and Harvey Levin. Really? This is like
Nancy Grace.
This is like a fever dream of mine.
Let me just say, it's been a long time coming.
Significant, huh? Beyond just Cosby.
Oh, hugely significant. And you know, a lot of people poke fun at the original supermodel Janice Dickinson. Remember, people love to make fun of her. She's a victim. When she described to me personally what happened with her and Cosby, it almost made me throw up.
Well, I got to say that, you know, of the one thing about this is that it is, you know, there are cases mm-hmm. in the Me Too movement where you stop and you listen to it and I think people quietly in their own head go, well, is that someone's interpretation of what happened? Or is that what actually happened? Are they really a victim? Or is this a date gone bad? In the Cosby cases, that is not what's going on here.
No, you hear multiple women speaking of how
they were drugged.
Well, more than that, he conned them into believing that he was a mentor, that he was going to get a job for them, that he was going to audition them. You know, in one case, he even said, okay, read for this part that you're going to play a drunk woman. Oh, you're not drunk. Just take a sip of this. And it allegedly had the pill in it.
Yeah.
And she then has recollections of things that happened with him. And so it's layered and just disgusting. I guess you can't call it evidence because not all of it has gone to trial, but disgusting narratives.
Right. Well, there's 62 women who've all claimed essentially the same thing. And let's just say that half of them are not being accurate, right? That means 31 have had this experience. But let's assume that all 62 have.
They didn't know each other, and they're not gaining financially. I don't know. I mean, you think about...
Well, some of them have gained financially because he has settled... he has settled a bunch of lawsuits here.
Andre Constand, he said he paid already some money to
$10 million,
well.
I think, right?
I thought it was lower than that, but she had her whole life sullied. They brought up things about how she didn't pay her rent one time, and that she stiffed roommates on different things, and that, you know, she has been known to do drugs in the past. I mean, like, her whole life came out on this, and that also happened with some of the other women.
And she was not the best witness because she had also, the woman came forward to testify that she had said that she was just going to sue somebody for money.
Right.
You know, but it was the other... Mike Monaco is going to be here to discuss
this.
Yeah,
we want to talk to him about that because it's kind of a controversial thing that the second trial did not involve, or did involve, prior women who came forward to say they had similar experiences. And the first trial, that when it deadlocked, that was not allowed.
And there's a possibility that he will not go to jail because of that. And we'll explain why coming up after 5:40. All right, here we go. Checking in at
number four.
The president this morning called into Fox and Friends.
He sure did.
New York Times is reporting that the White House was worried about it. And there's probably a good reason for that.
You know, these are all false accusations that were made. These are false. They're trying to destroy a man. By the way, I did say welcome to Washington, welcome to the swamp, welcome to the world of politics.
Sure.
But for John Tester to start bringing up stuff like Candyman and the kind of things he was saying, and then say, well, you know, these are just statements that are made.
Right.
There's no proof of this. And he has a perfect record. He's got this beautiful record, unblemished. His son is a wonderful boy, goes to Annapolis at the top of his class, one of the finest cadets.
Now, that's him talking about the White House doctor that he fronted. I should have set that up. I didn't do that properly. Sorry. That he wanted to run the Veterans Administration, right? Mm-hmm. Veterans Affairs. Mm-hmm. And
Ronnie Jackson.
Ronnie Jackson is the White House doctor. Now, no one thought that was a good idea when he decided on it. It was like, well, Ronnie Jackson is a doc. He's a great doctor. People liked him. The Obamas loved him. I mean, he's
three different presidents he worked for all gave him raving reviews, but he wouldn't had never managed a staff, and this was a couple hundred thousand people.
And so he goes off on this whole thing. The problem with this is that there's a bunch of stories that he was overprescribing medication or just handing out either downers or uppers to keep people moving, you know, through the day, which often happens in show business and business and in military, by the way. But he's not. That's one of the stories. I don't know that. So, you know, there were stories about the doctors during the Kennedy years. There was a doctor, the Dr. Feelgood, that would come in and give them vitamin B shots. That would, mm-hmm. you know. So that is not an unusual story. But then there was another one that he drunk drove a car that crashed and it was government property. And now Trump says that's not true at all. The issue with that is if that's provable with police reports.
Right.
That's a different situation.
And there was serious pushback when there was sort of these workplace inappropriate behavior things came up, too. He said this is outrageous. That didn't happen.
But then at the end, now listen to this. The thing got so off the rails that even Fox and Friends was putting an end to their interview with the president of the United States. Listen to this.
He took $700,000. And you look at the corruption at the top of the FBI, it's a disgrace. And our Justice Department, which I try and stay away from, but at some point I won't. Our Justice Department should be looking at that kind of stuff, not the nonsense of collusion with Russia. There is no collusion with me and Russia. And everyone knows it.
Everyone, we could talk to you all day, but it looks like you have a million things to do.
You gotta go.
When would you gotta go. That when you have an interview with the president, you
right.
have to go on forever.
That is not the case, because the White House is calling, going, get him off! Get him off!
It would be funny if you can hear the knocking in the back. He's locked himself in a room somewhere at the White House.
I am calling again. Sean, it's me. Listen. Well, he's using his own cell phone now, too, which is that's brilliant. Don't worry, the Russians aren't listening to that. Let's now stop and find out from Judy what's coming up at the bottom of the hour.
Fly to the front of the line at LitFest June 9th and June 10th with a Fest Pass. Get yours before they're gone. Printers Row, LitFest.org/FestPass.
Rocon Show with Anna DeBlantis continues right here, 720 WGN. Top 5. 5 continues. We're up to. We're up to.
Yeah,
this is what we're up to.
We know what we're up to.
Yes,
sure we're
up to this
number.
Number 3.
That's straight.
God. Oh, I don't know. Things are not working. My buttons are not working. Hey, former employees at a suburban Twin Peaks restaurant have filed a federal complaint claiming that the company forced them to line up for weekly body evaluations and wear revealing lingerie. In a series of complaints, former Orland Park employees claim that they were forced to change into skimpy outfits in full view of kitchen staff. Women said they were required to purchase revealing clothing outside the company's dress code and text photos to their bosses from dressing rooms to decide whether the ensembles were revealing enough for their work. Women said they were cited by police for violating indecent exposure laws with their attire their bosses forced them to wear. Jessica Mercer claims that they were the subject of a weekly tone grade evaluations in which their bodies, hair, and makeup were evaluated.
About 5 to 6 months in, after working with a certain standard, they changed it completely and started doing a grading system that basically the girls had to stand up in a line and be judged on their arms, their stomach, their back, and their legs. And out of those points that you got, determine what section you got, how late you were there till, and ultimately affected how much money you made. It made us all feel just terrible. It made our self-confidence drop completely. We were being told things like, you have love handles, your thighs are too fat, you need to look like this girl. That's why this girl's making more money than you.
Ugh.
Well, their Gross. Industry is based on looks to a certain extent, but sending pictures to your manager as a requirement or having to trot around to show off if you look good enough is a little bit much.
Thank you, doctor. Thank you. Thank you.
I found problems with them a lot more than that. I mean, contests and the whole thing's gross.
I mean, we used to, I don't know.
Okay. We used to, who's we?
No, I don't know what I was going to say, but there's contests about everything.
didn't Bronco have girl groups? Wasn't that part of it?
Yeah, but I mean, anything
would have done for that.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. All right. The poor man. He's had enough, hasn't he? Well, it's interesting, but it's Twin Peaks. I mean, that's I mean, a lot of people are going to stop and go, well, you knew what you're signing up for when you go to work at a place like that. Right? I mean, now, this, what they're describing here, seems to be above and beyond, especially if you have to, you know, if you have to change in front of other people or whatever. But as long as, if you're within the, whatever the, I don't know, the costume would be, I guess you would call it. For that, like
outfits or uniforms,
twisted kilt or whatever. I mean, it's sort of like,
yeah, I think you kind of know when you see a Hooters or a twisted kilt that that's the uniform you have to wear. And if you don't like that, I guess you don't work there. But this seemed like it sort of went far beyond that to contests and pinching you for see if you're toned and the whole thing.
All right,
yuck.
Checking in at
number two
tonight, Avengers Infinity War opens. It's the massive Marvel team-up movie. 20 superheroes in it. Chris Pratt, who's not Chris Pine.
No, different guy, right. Turns out.
Who plays the Star-Lord in the Guardians of the Galaxy franchise and says the time has been put in by Marvel and the fans to make this a massive hit.
There are 18 movies. That's like 36 hours, maybe 40 hours of straight, you know, cinematic splendor that you take as a crash course to get ready for this movie. And the crazy thing is the entire world has taken that crash course. And so that's why you can make a movie like this. That's why it's so exciting. And that's why it's going to be the biggest movie of all time.
It'll probably gross like, what, $3 billion? If Black Panther is any guide.
Yeah. It's in Black Panther's in it, all the characters are in it, and they just come together for this and then go away. I think that what they've done, Stan Lee and the people that have done Marvel now,
mm-hmm.
have, and Marvel is Disney, I think, now.
Yeah,
right?
It is.
It's just amazing what they've done. The movies are great. They're all fun. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's, you know, some are better than others, but they're all completely watchable in a theater setting.
Yeah, and you don't have to be a superhero geek
right.
to love them, and still a lot of the geeks seem satisfied.
Oh, yes. I've been to a lot of them now, yeah. And the geeks are, and I'm telling
very
you,
satisfied.
The conversation after the movie, as you're walking out in line, is, woo, like, that's something.
Sometimes don't even understand those conversations.
Richard Roper gave it 3 stars.
Yeah, he did. He
all right.
It.
Checking in at
number one.
Very rarely does somebody make it twice into the top 5 at 5 in a single day, but the president of the United States, he's a unique cat, as we like to say. And therefore, he ends up at number 4 and number 1 because, yes, he was on Fox News today, and he made a lot of news and gave us a lot of tape that we'll use forever. But he started off the interview. It ended weirdly, right, because they bum-rushed him off the interview.
Yeah, they did.
But this is the crazy part. Started the interview talking about Melania, because today is Melania's birthday.
Oh.
So listen to this.
Well, good morning, and I picked a very, very special day because it's Melania's birthday. So I said, let's do it on Melania's birthday. So happy birthday to Melania.
All right. Hopefully there'll be visits in between, but have you decided on, or do you want to tell us what you got her?
Well, I better not get into that because I may get in trouble. Maybe I didn't get her so much. I'll tell you what, she has done. I got her a beautiful card. You know, I'm very busy to be running out looking for presents, okay? But I got a beautiful card and some beautiful flowers, and she did a fantastic job with France.
Got to keep a safety gift in the trunk.
I'm telling you. That first of all, there's a lot of guys who are like, I totally understand what just happened right there. I totally forgot it's
you wanted
birthday.
Me to sign the card?
He was scrambling for stuff. Maybe I don't want to tell you. Well, I've been busy. Yeah, a card. That's
I'm doing
what
this.
I got.
I'm appearing on Fox News for you, baby. Look at this. That's what I'm doing.
Like, threw his head cycling through. What should I say? I didn't get her anything.
Well, it's, you know, today I decided we're going to do that. You get a shout out on Fox News Channel. Come on. Oh, man. Yeah.
He drank the truth serum before he got on there. I mean, he really revealed a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, that maybe he shouldn't have.
It's very entertaining, though, that he's, you know, he's like, oh, I can't really say anything about this because I really didn't get her anything because I really don't care. Besides, we don't want to touch each other in person anymore.
Oh, please. Come on.
So if you noticed, I mean, like, he'd like reaches for her hand and she's always like pulling away. She is like so over this. And do you see him at the CVS in the card thing?
No.
Should I get the adult one, the with the humor shoebox? Which one do I get? I don't see him doing that.
No, I don't.
One of those dorky golf ones. Yeah. This one's hilarious.
I love this.
The ball hit him right there.
Right in the hole. See that? Oh, she'll love it.
You get it?
All right.
That's, happy birthday, Melania.
Yeah,
There were plenty of warning signs of a guilty verdict for Bill Cosby.
Hold on a second. I don't know what that's all about. What was that from? Is that Judy? Sorry.
No, it wasn't me. Okay. Yes, it was. Sorry.
All right. We have Judy's news coming your way right after.
The top five at five.
Rokan Show with Anna DeBlantis right here on 720 WGN. All right, Michael Monaco is here, and we got a lot to talk about with him because there's a lot of things happening in the world of America that happened in a courtroom or about to happen in a courtroom, I think, before it's all said and done. And let's, we'll start with Cosby. Excuse me. I'm okay. I'm just having a slight heart attack. Cosby is convicted now of these three counts of sexual assault.
Right. Of the same woman, Andrea Constant.
Right. It's the three different versions based on the same event. Mm-hmm. Let's just talk about this from a sentencing standpoint.
Yeah. He's facing 10 years for each count, but it's unlikely the judge
at
will.
At 80, what do you think? 80. What do you think happens here?
I think he's going to get a couple of years in jail. A
couple of years, right? That's 2-3 years.
What do they take into consideration? His age? His health?
They do take that in consideration. They may also take into consideration the other women who have accused him of doing the same thing.
That's interesting.
So there are five of whom testified in corroborate the story. And you say, well, why would they let that in? They say that to let in, so that's like the signature. That identifies the person. It's to say that what he did with these other five women is consistent, same thing or similar to what he did with Andrea Constant, the victim in this case. And that is why the jury should believe her, that these women are all saying that he did the same or similar, something similar to them. And so I think a judge has to give him some time in jail, seems to me.
That's the interesting part, though, because in the first trial, the other women with similar narratives or similar experiences, I guess you could say.
Only one of them was allowed to testify in the first trial.
One. And then the second one with the guilty verdict, you had five.
Five others, right.
Okay, so now there's another defense attorneys, and he has a very famous defense attorney.
Oh, yeah, same one who defended Michael Jackson.
Right, successfully. But this is a guy who's like an out-of-towner, comes into a smaller venue here in Pennsylvania. It's not even in Philadelphia. It's outside of Philadelphia.
Right.
And it's a county to the west.
Montgomery County.
Yeah, yeah. So it's not a gigantic... So the jury pool is going to be smaller. It's kind of a risk to take a big, flamboyant L.A. lawyer out there and do that.
That's true, but really it's... It's the man. It's the defendant here who's the celebrity.
So let's talk about this idea, though, that because the judge in this case let these other people testify, there's an argument some lawyers are making on TV that is going to lead to
a reversal.
An appeal, and then a potential reversal on error.
Really? Well, it's interesting. There's a common issue, though. It's all over the United States. Juries are allowed this. They're allowed to have what they call other crime evidence if it's similar to the crime that's being charged, to show that it's the person who's testifying as the accused victim in this case, that person is truthful because what happened to her is the same thing that happened to these other women, and that... It is evidence that that's the signature of the defendant.
Right, but then why wouldn't they allow more in the first trial if that is something that's totally allowable?
It's completely discretionary. It's the completely discretionary, and the judge in that case, I assume, thought that the prosecutor didn't need it. Here it was obvious the prosecutor needed it because they got the hung jury the first time.
All right, so they've got him, and you say somewhere 2 to 3 years, maybe?
I would think so.
Something like that?
Yeah.
And they let him go. This is unusual. He was convicted of three significant felonies.
But he's a famous fellow. Where's he going? He's 80 years old.
All right, so now let me ask you this. Let me ask you this.
I know, but the prosecutor, you're right, the prosecutor asked that he be locked up.
Right, the prosecutor asked that and said he's a flight risk because he has his own plane, and then...
And what did Cosby say?
Cosby stood... Actually, we have the audio here. Wait, no, we have the audio. This is a witness from the courtroom that told this to CNN, and she used the full word. We're not using the full word, but you'll be able to figure it out.
At that point, the state attorney said, Your Honor, we believe he's a flight risk. He has a private plane. At that point, Bill Cosby stood up, looked at the state attorney and said in a loud, booming voice, he doesn't have a plane, you It was loud. It was strong. His PR representative came over to Bill Cosby to try to calm him down. And the judge was actually on the side of Bill Cosby. You give me facts that he's going to be a flight risk. I don't see it. File a motion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But there you saw a little bit of the man that people on TV never saw.
That we never saw.
Never seen him say stuff like that. So that's maybe a little.
He just got convicted of rape, so he's
Well, but who is he?
Yeah,
is he the violent person that the victim said he is, or is he not? You know, is he the person from TV?
Yeah, I have a question about the whole consent thing, because that is one of the questions that the jury came back to the judge with and said, Judge, can you define for us the legal definition of consent? The judge said, no, it's going to be up to you as the jury to understand what consent is. There are some other legal analysts saying that may be an opening for an appeal, and I don't really understand why.
Well, the jury instructions are always very, very touchy issues, and often they lead to reversals. But here, the consent issue is interesting because I don't think any of the five women who testified or six women who testified will say that they had the ability to have consent or not, because they were all drugged. Mm-hmm. Each of them claimed to have been somehow drugged by Quaaludes, and interestingly, the defendant, Bill Cosby, admitted that in a deposition, that he would use Quaaludes to help him have sex with women.
Right.
So how can it be consensual, right, if you're knocked out, if you're unconscious?
Well, if you don't have the ability
unless you
ability
consent to taking them. If you consent to taking them, it becomes a different situation.
I'm not even sure that's true.
The problem with that theory.
Yeah.
I know that in my many years of not going to law school, I can tell you this.
Well, obviously, you have more more experience with Quaaludes than I do, but that's a different issue.
I've never taken a Quaalude. I can say that. I'm afraid of drugs.
Yeah.
I stay off of them. I'm Melania Trump, and I've been talking about that. I have a sense of that, you know, if you're out partying with somebody.
Yeah.
Right, and you go back to their hotel room.
Well, like a lot of cases involving drinking. Yeah. A lot of cases involve two parties are drunk,
right,
and they have sex, and the woman then accuses him of rape. And
that's one of those things that it is often a case where there has to be an interpretive moment there.
Yeah,
you have to prove force, and you have to prove that somebody got you drunk with the intention. There was never any intention in the first place. We're getting to that point in this, legally here, there's going to be a pushback. Listen, when Charlie Rose, you mentioned this earlier, Anna, when Charlie Rose is going to have his own show where Me Tooers get up, the Me Too perpetrators get up and confess their sins
really
on television.
That's what he's going to do?
Right, it's in its own gate in a reality show.
So like Matt Lauer comes on, Harvey Weinstein comes on and explains they've seen the light or something.
They'll bring Harvey on in sweeps, though, trust me, because he's the big one. But it's a weird moment. But people have to describe what all of that is.
It's a troubling issue when both parties are drunk. But here it's clear where one party is given a drug that
they didn't know,
they didn't agree to do it, and they thought it was for something else. And sure enough, they're knocked out.
Absolutely.
That's why some of these cases are so hard to prove, because it becomes he said, she said, right? You decided to get drunk with him. You decided to go home with him. When did the consent end? Yeah. But not in this case.
Or the 62 other or 61 other women who have come forward to say this, their stories, the ones that are all similar, most of them are, involve this.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a really horrible situation.
Yeah. All right. Stand by. Michael, stay there for just 1 second. I have another question for you about what the president said today about Michael Cohen and what does that all mean? But that's coming away. But first, right now, Judy, what's coming up at the top of the hour? Rob Khan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. We got Adam Hogan to join us in just a few minutes. We get ready for the Bears draft pick tonight.
Yes,
see
big
what's
night.
Gonna happen there. But first, Mike Monaco was here, and we were talking about the Bill Cosby conviction today. But the other big story is that earlier today, Donald Trump was on Fox and Friends. 45 minutes, and what was pretty much a sort of Donald Trump unplugged. And he was he said a lot of things, but a lot of legal tongues are wagging concerning this little exchange that he had.
How much of your legal work was handled by Michael Cohen?
Well, as a percentage of my overall legal work, a tiny, tiny little fraction.
Yeah, that caused the federal prosecutors in New York to not just wag their tongues, but write down a motion to bring to the court to say that this proves that there are not voluminous records of attorney-client that are attorney-client privileged and protected that were in Mr. Cohen's offices, so that the judge shouldn't have to worry about the voluminous amount of records that are attorney-client privileged protected.
So it wouldn't involve all of the records that involve Trump? That, you know, you see what I'm saying? And anything, I would assume that anything that would involve the president or say his name would be protected under attorney-client privilege.
No, that's why they wrote the motion, because the president is saying, he went on to say that Mr. Cohen is mostly a businessman. And that doesn't act as a lawyer. It acts more like a businessman.
Which means that all of the stuff that they got out of his office, most of the stuff that got out of this office could be used because it wouldn't be attorney-client privilege.
Yes. And even if it were attorney-client, even if it were an attorney-client communication, if it were not about some legal issue, if it were, for example, about business or about advice or something regarding business, the government can claim that that's not protected. Or if it's about something illegal, like hiding money that you're going to put towards Stormy Daniels or whatever.
Let me ask you this, because you're a former assistant U.S. attorney. You know a lot of people in the Department of Justice. Let me ask you what your reaction to this is.
You look at McCabe, where he takes $700,000 from somebody supporting Hillary Clinton. He takes $700,000 for his wife's campaign. And by the way, didn't even spend that money. They kept some of it, because under that law, she took seven. He took $700,000 from a group headed by Terry McAuliffe, who was under investigation by McCabe and the FBI, and that investigation disappeared. He took $700,000. And you look at the corruption at the top of the FBI, it's a disgrace. And our Justice Department, which I try and stay away from, but at some point I won't.
Wow. That's amazing. The President of the United States attacking the Department of Justice and the FBI.
And attacking an individual in the former Deputy Attorney General,
Number two guy at the
Justice Department. At the FBI. And now his wife ran for a statewide office in Virginia and was supported by the then governor of Virginia for that. And that's this McAuliffe guy that he's talking about.
Right.
And they got a campaign contribution.
Right.
Now, the president makes it sound like McCabe got $700,000 himself personally and kept it.
That's unlikely.
It is inaccurate.
Yeah,
but I think in Virginia, you have to look into it. The campaign and the election laws allow you to do. There are liberal applications of what's left over after,
right?
So it's not technically true, but you can go and look at it, and there might be a little bit of fudgeability there.
Well, the question, I believe that the McCabes have answered this question.
Yeah,
about what happened to the money.
Yeah,
give it to other campaigns.
What's really more important than that,
but the point is, so you're saying that if you work at the FBI, you can't have a spouse who does something out. It can't be.
That's what he's saying, right? That's what he's saying. That's what the president is saying.
Right.
That you're limited in what your wife and what your spouse can do.
But if you have a business that could directly benefit from your role as President of the United States, then that's okay.
That's okay.
Okay. All right.
Good to see you.
Michael, thank
nice
you very much.
You,
I appreciate it. Now I want to find out who the Bears are going to get. Now that I'm in this kind of a mood, I got to find out who the Bears are going to get. And Adam Hoge is going to be here to do that for us. But first, Judy tells us what's coming up at the bottom of the hour in the WGN newsroom.
Prosecutors say he was no Dr. Huxtable. We'll have that at 6:30.
Violetta? Oh, here we go.
Here we go. March around.
It's the moment.
Get excited.
All right. We got our sports team here for the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis ready for the big Bears draft tonight, or the big NFL draft tonight. And Adam Hoge has been, he and Mel Kiper, known as the two greatest prognosticians of this, of the draft. And Kevin Powell has his own thoughts on this as well. Who do we think the Bears are going to go for here? What are the Bears going to go for?
If I had to narrow it down to two guys, I'd say if you're going offense, Quentin Nelson. If you're going defense, Roquan Smith. Those would say that's who I'd say right now the two.
I'm
likely
so hoping because he pronounces it Rokan.
Yeah, right in town.
That's just even better. Rokan Smith.
We'd have
Rokan.
To have him on right away.
Yeah. He's the linebacker from Georgia, and Quentin Nelson. Quentin Nelson to me would be an absolute perfect fit. You've heard nothing but positive things about him. He's an All-American guard from Notre Dame. Could be a guy that's here for 10 years protecting Mitch Trubisky in an ideal situation. I just don't know if he's going to be there at 8, and that's why I haven't ruled out Ryan Pace making another trade. I wouldn't be surprised at all
to
if
move from 8 to 7.
To 8 to
give
6.
Up everything to move. Yeah.
Give up 5 picks to get to that 7 spot.
All of it.
Well, the good news is he can't give up a third round pick.
That's right. He's out of them.
He doesn't have one.
Right. Yeah. Okay, well there you got that going for us.
Scenario. Already gave it away.
But what are the chances if he says he's got 8 players he feels comfortable with for the number 8 pick, 8 are on that list. He won't reveal what they are, but what are the chances he totally surprises us again this year? Like last year.
By the way, they say that every year. So if they were picking 12th right now, he would have said we have 12 players that we feel great about right now at number 12.
Line?
What could be a surprise? I think just any scenario where they trade up again.
What about for Bradley Chubb? What if he did something that dramatic and went up
to trade up to go get him?
An edge rusher that would absolutely fulfill a hole right now on Vic Fangio's defense, edge rusher.
I guess that's not a surprise to me, though. They need that position more than any other position on the roster right now. So, yeah, I could totally see them doing that.
Because the interior defensive line, is there's a lot of talent there. Actually,
yes, I like the D line a lot with Akeem Hicks and even Jonathan Bullard, who I thought made a huge step forward last year. I think in year three, this coming season, he could be a big player.
Yeah, so I mean, you do have some. I guess we're going back to the 4-3, right?
3-4 still with Fangio.
Oh, Fangio, right.
So you have the consistency there. I also wouldn't be surprised if they traded down a few picks and then gained an extra, maybe they gain a third round pick or something along those lines if everything doesn't work out.
That's very interesting. You guys are confusing me now.
Yeah. It's a lot of math.
Can we go back? Let's go back to Rokan Smith for just a second.
Yeah. Rokan?
I'm going to rename him Rokan Smith. I don't care how anybody pronounces it. It's Rokan. Because is it R A Q U A N?
It's
R O Q U A N.
Right, mm-hmm. Rokan,
and he's a monster.
Yeah. Now I at Georgia, right, and as you will recall, he did not have a great national championship game though, right?
The Rose Bowl though. I mean, he was.
That was almost over. Like he set the bar too high in the Rose Bowl, and he couldn't live up to it in the national championship.
Right. But he is a monster. Let's talk about why he would be a good fit.
Well, I just think that ever since Brian Urlacher retired, the Bears haven't had a
star linebacker, which they've always had.
But not just a star linebacker, but somebody who on every single play knows what the heck is happening. You know, knows that, hey, this is where the play is going. This is, Matt Forte at his retirement ceremony a couple days ago talked about his first practice. And they call the play in the huddle, they get to the line of scrimmage, and Brian Urlacher called out what the play was before the ball was snapped. And Matt was like, what am I supposed to do? I mean, he knows, and sure enough, he stopped. And this was just a practice, but that's what Urlacher did. So one of the reasons why I like Roquan Smith so much, Roquan Smith, is that everyone talks about him in that light. The instincts are there, and he seems to understand plays before they develop, which is why he's actually a little undersized, but it's probably why it won't matter. Because he just gets to where the ball is.
Right. And the Bears, the tradition of the Bears, my entire life, is they have an all-star running back, downhill, just, you know, work a day, 3 yards and a cloud of dust kind of concept for a running back, and a great middle linebacker, right? Sure. That was the whole thing.
Yeah.
So you can go back and go back to, you know, Butkus on the defensive line, to Singletary, to Urlacher. You know, you got Hall of Fame, Hall of Fame, Hall of Fame. And that's, and we do, and there have been some talented guys. I don't want to take anything away from some of these guys who are very, very good, but you don't have that. And that's what the Bears were always known for.
They
and,
just lack stars in general right now.
But they do have a great, I think Jordan Howard is going to be a star in the NFL. Now, he may not be a star with the Bears.
Maybe.
Because they're going to change the way that they run the offense. Is going to be one of those kind of, you know, crazy.
Get ready to hear a lot about RPOs, which is run pass options. It's kind of right. options and different things where Trubisky can pitch the ball or throw the ball. It's going to be a completely looking offense. And I think it does fit in perfectly for Trubisky's style play.
Anna, maybe that's the, if I was to pick one surprise, it'd be if they traded up to get Saquon Barkley tonight. Because
people talk about him going number one.
Yeah, but I think the Browns are taking a quarterback number one.
Didn't they already say they were going to take Saquon Barkley?
No, the talk today is that they're going to take Baker Mayfield,
from Oklahoma.
Right.
But I don't know. I think the Giants probably take Barkley. I
would just be shocked if the Giants don't take a quarterback this year.
Well, that's fine, but then Barkley's not getting past four when the Browns pick again.
Right.
You know what
right.
I mean?
So, I mean, you would have to trade up to four.
You'd have to trade up to four, but that gets back to the offense, what we're talking about. What if Matt Nagy's telling Ryan Pace, hey, I need a running back that can catch the ball. I need a running back that can do everything. And I like Jordan Howard. You hand him the ball, he picks up yards. That's what his job is to do. But he can't catch.
And even if you do have those two running backs, if you add Barkley and the way Nagy's offense is, you could spread Barkley out as a receiver. I mean, the running back position is utilized in many ways in Matt Nagy's offense. So even if you had those three guys, that's still a lot of talent. Too much talent is never a bad thing. So I would be on board if they traded up for Barkley.
Here's the problem, though. You have too much talent in one position.
Yeah, but in this offense, they utilize that position in
a different way. So you think you would carry all three?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I would probably try to trade
maybe
Jordan
trade
Howard,
but either way, if you did have all three, that's not a bad thing.
You know what it is? You know what he just did? Hmm. He just wanted to put whipped cream on his ice cream cake.
A little bit.
That already has sprinkles
true.
On it.
That's true. And that's what I just think very highly of Saquon Barkley.
Yeah, well, a lot of people do. I'm all about Rokon.
Any relation?
No relation.
No relation.
Good. On the record, Rokon is all about Rokon.
Well, I'm just going to say this. That
it'd
I think
be good for the show.
It would be good for the show.
Oh, great.
It would be a good cross-promotional thing. We could hire him, and it would be Rokon or Rokon, and yeah. we'd get that sort of thing. And by the way, half this town calls me Rokon to begin with because they think it's all one word.
Right.
So it's all good by me. It's all good in this.
That's the first question I get. Is that really his name?
Maybe you need to change your name to Roquan.
I would. If we get him all to, if we get him and he's good, I'll change my name to Roquan.
Or you both kind of split it down the middle. It's kind of Roquan.
Let's wait to see how he pans out first. You don't want to get tied in too early.
Right. What if he turns out to be Kevin White? Hey, how's he doing, by the way? Have we heard from him?
Well, it's April, so he's fast. He's explosive. He's not wearing pads.
He's looking great. He's looking sharp
healthy,
out there.
Real healthy.
Legitimately, I saw him at the mini camp last week, and he looked exactly like the guy they thought he was. He could run really, really fast, but put pads on him and have someone tackle him and his bones break.
Oh.
What are you, not an orthopedic surgeon?
Well,
what the hell?
You're
making a forward-looking statement.
I'm a historian.
It's hard to keep track of all his injuries.
I was out of town, and I ran into a guy who's from Chicago, grew up in Chicago, doesn't live here anymore, but he's a gigantic Bears fan. He's got the Sunday package so he can watch it and the whole deal.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, oh, you're from Chicago. All he wanted to talk about was the Bears. And I'm like, it's been so long since anybody has wanted to talk to me about the Bears. Mm-hmm. People are excited. They think that this